Looking back at main headlines from the month of August. We are a few days early for our month in review program. That's because Maine Calling is running some popular rebroadcasts next week during summer break. But there is still plenty to talk about. The month started with a late legislative session so that lawmakers could consider veto overrides. Just yesterday, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke issued his recommendation, or at least part of it, about the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. And a whole lot of news happened in between. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, I am joined by the editorial page editors of three of Maine's leading newspapers to discuss the news of the month. What have you been discussing with your friends this month? Is it whether Senator Collins will run for governor? Governor LePage's comments about Mainers in the Confederacy? We hope you'll join the conversation today. But first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Finally, a decision. Well, kind of a decision on the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. But still no decision from Senator Collins about whether she will run for governor, although she is apparently dropping hints. The legislature finally ended an unusually long session, and the governor has been lambasted for his remarks about the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. Joining me to discuss these stories and more, three of our state's editorial page editors, Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News, Greg Kesich with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram, and Ben Bragdon with the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. As always, we want to hear from you. Which Maine stories from this past month do you care most about? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you. I think this is a first, three editorial page editors together. This will be a lot of fun. And I think we should probably start with the most recent news. So many people were waiting so long to find out about Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. Ben, the Kennebec Journal is, I guess, the closest. Well, maybe Bangor Daily News, Susan, is the closest physically. What did you make of Interior Secretary Zinke's announcement that we're going to keep it, but there still might be some changes?
I think overall it was good news. People really breathed a sigh of relief that the monument was going to stay a monument and that it would stay the size that it is. But there is a lot of confusion over when he talks about changes. What exactly does he mean? As you know, he's put out a summary document, but no one has seen a specific plan for Katahdin Woods and Waters. And we've heard that they want some kind of demonstration-type logging. Not sure exactly what that means. People have talked of a historical nature and also perhaps allowing some more traditional uses, although most uses are already allowed in the monument, just not in 100% of the land. So still a lot of uncertainty. And also, this is Zinke's report to the president. Is the president going to accept it? Is he going to say it doesn't go far enough? That's a huge unknown as well.
And that is a question as well. And Ben, what about the businesses in the area? Susan says a huge sigh of relief, but enough information to continue to make business plans about what to do next?
Yeah, I think so. You know, there's been kind of this pointless and divisive debate going on in that region for, I don't know, 15 or 20 years now, putting industry versus tourism, and it's been kind of this fight for the identity of the region when it can really have both those things. And I hope that this announcement, I'd hope that then-President Obama making this designation a year ago would kind of lead towards the end of that and have everyone move on. But it seems that maybe this is the point when everyone can kind of say, okay, this is a done deal, and how are we going to make the most of it? And how can we leverage this beautiful piece of land and this great gift from Roxanne Quimby to really turn around what is a really struggling area of the state?
Greg, Governor LePage has been against this and continues to speak out against it. Have we heard from him since yesterday?
Well, not that I'm aware of. You know, I think the nut of his objection and much of the objection was about whether or not there would be a federal presence, federal managed public land in the heart of the North Woods managed for recreation. And it looks like that's going to be what happens. I think the conditions that Zinke is hinting at are more in terms of providing some kind of political coverage for the people who lost. But basically, the fight is over about whether this is, in fact, a piece of, a big public park in the North Woods. And we'll find out if the critics were right and that a federal presence in this area is going to hurt other industries. The example they often bring up is the Appalachian Trail, the view corridors and things like that. You know, will there be a creeping federal presence? And we're going to find out what the proponents have been arguing is that it'll create a economic opportunities. And so I expect that, I think Susan's concerns are probably pretty accurate. But I think there's going to be something that comes out looking a lot like a national monument where there's a national monument.
Do we have any idea of timeline when we might find out more details and when President Trump may make a decision based on Interior Secretary Zinke's recommendation?
I don't think we do. I think Zinke was very open-ended with that his recommendations are before the president. And even I think he said he doesn't know exactly what will happen next.
Okay, well, let's talk about Senator Susan Collins, because it seems that this comes up every single month, but people seem really interested. A lot of people had assumed that she would not run for governor. A lot of the pundits saying, why on earth would you want to be governor? Saying, look at the power that she will have if she stays in the Senate and Republicans retain control. She could be head of appropriations. But now apparently has been dropping hints that she may run for governor. Who wants to take that, Ben?
I think she's going to run. I have absolutely nothing to base that on except for just my own hunch, I guess. She goes back and forth and back and forth. It seems like it's a huge decision to give up a comfortable seat in the Senate. And as you said, she's headed for a very powerful place and to come back home. But I think maybe the pull to bring her back here to finish her career in May might be a little too much.
Greg, Governor LePage said that if she runs in the Republican primary, she won't win it.
Well, the governor knows a lot about Republican politics in Maine, and certainly that's the only question is if she ran in a primary, that's the only challenge she would face is the primary would be the only challenge she's likely to face. I go back and forth. I don't know. Every time I'm on the show, I think I've given a different answer. So I'm with she's not running this time. And I just base that on the way she handled the health care vote and the way she like she was recently on MSNBC and very critical of the president. It didn't look like somebody who was trying to protect herself in a Republican primary. Mm-hmm. I imagine that she meets lots and lots of people who beg her to run. And for her to say, I'm not interested in that, would be kind of insulting to them.
Don't you think she probably meets as many people who say, please, please, we need you in the Senate, stay?
I bet she does, and I bet most of them live in the other 49 states.
Interesting. Susan Young, how about the health care vote? How would that affect her political prospects down the road?
Well, as Greg suggested, it's not a move of somebody that's concerned about winning a Republican primary. I mean, we've heard from a lot of folks who are very angry at her because of that vote, you know, who consider her a rhino. And obviously, a lot of people think it was a really great vote, but they aren't Republicans or they're not the type of Republicans that are going to vote in a primary. So I agree with Greg. I mean, it just seems I think there are certain appeals to running for governor. I mean, I know she would love to be the first woman, but her actions lately, she's kind of back to that centrist role in a very different way because we don't really have a lot of centrists in the Senate. But being in that spotlight, being a key decision maker as she was in the Senate several years ago when that had kind of waned, and I think, you know, there was a lot of frustration. But through the health care vote and the way she explained her vote, she's kind of back in that role that she gets a lot of praise and attention for. And as you mentioned, you know, as her power increases, I think there's a lot of good reasons to stay in the Senate.
I had to double check the date on this. I cannot believe that the legislature wrapped up this month, but it's true. The legislature wrapped up, I believe, August 2nd of this month. It was veto override day. And I think the bill that most people were keeping their eye on was the solar bill. We did an entire Maine Calling program on that. It had passed originally with pretty wide margins, but as they did last year, lawmakers switched their votes and were not able to override the governor's veto. I'm going to read something you wrote, Greg. It was a column about a couple weeks ago. Really,
I can
about
either confirm or deny.
You know, a really interesting column about all politics being cultural. But a point you made in this, something as boring as the compensation formula for power produced by solar panels, has been become a class war in Maine.
Yeah. Well, it's the way Governor LePage approaches almost every issue of public policy, which is there is a victim and a villain and a hero. And sometimes he's the hero and sometimes he's the victim and sometimes he's both. And this was a case where he paints a picture of old people and poor people who are paying pennies more for their electricity because wealthy Southern Maine liberal, you know, whatever, Volvo driving lawyers, you know, just whatever cultural stereotype you can imagine are enjoying solar power. And really what we're talking about is a math problem, and it could be resolved in the way it is in many states, as how much solar power do you want to buy? How much do you want to pay for it? What's the appropriate way to pay for it? And we have this. Everybody agrees we have this this system, net metering, that's kind of out of date. It was based on a system or a situation where there was very few people who actually had solar energy, and so it didn't really matter what you paid them for it. So every time the legislature takes a step towards trying to modernize the system and accommodate the fact that more and more people have power or make their power this way, it gets stymied by this kind of class war rhetoric. It happened last year with a fairly ambitious compromise solar bill that had, you know, CMP was on board and the installers were on board, and it died on veto override. And this was a very modest change. I think the main thing it did was ask the PUC to do a study about the best way to compensate for solar. And it again died on veto override. And I think this is because the governor, he has enough power to stop things from happening. And he doesn't have enough power to you know, create an initiative.
Susan? I agree with Greg. I would just add a little different this time around was the lobbying effort by Central Maine Power. Mm-hmm. I mean, they came in really hard against this bill this time and convinced enough lawmakers that it was a bad idea.
On the same day, though, the legislature did override the veto that the governor had on raising the age to buy cigarettes to 21. Ben, any thoughts about the differences and why one override succeeded and one did not?
I can't get into their heads when they decide to go against the governor and when they do. You know, raising the age of tobacco is should be a pretty non-controversial thing. It saves lives. It keeps people from starting. It shows that when people become smokers, they become smokers because they start when they're young. And this would have stopped that. And I know the governor made a big deal of it and talked about changing the age you can vote and go in the military and all these other, you know, ridiculous notions. But I think to most people in the legislature, it was just a simple way to combat what is a pretty bad public health problem.
So as we're talking about Governor LePage, bringing up one more point about him, one of the comments, actually, there are two things he said this month that have really incited a bunch of controversy, if my memory is serving me right. And we'll start with the sort of more mild of the two, the comment about teachers being a dime a dozen. Greg, what was that all about?
You know, far be it from me to say what the governor meant to say, but it's pretty clear to me from the full quote in context, he was trying to say something nice about mentor relationships in vocational education. But he seems like incapable of saying something nice without attacking somebody else. And he made it into this thing where vocational education mentors are better than teachers. You know, and anybody in education will tell you that vocational education is really important and we should have more of it. And mentorships are fantastic and we should have more of it. And they'll also tell you that teachers are really important. And he just he couldn't express a positive statement about these mentorships without trashing somebody.
So, Susan, the other one is that in the wake of the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, and the removal of statues, the governor said that 7,600 Mainers fought for the Confederacy. And then after he said that, he said he was receiving death threats for his statements. He said that on WVOM radio. This is a number people can neither confirm nor deny. We have no idea. What is the broader context of this? And is the governor simply trying to defend his president?
Again, as Greg said, far be it from us to know exactly what the governor's thinking. But I think it is disprovable that 7,600 people from Maine fought for the Confederacy. That would be an equivalent of a regiment. We had a draft. If these people were suddenly missing, I think the Union Army would have done something about it. And State Archivist Cheever said that he has found records of 30 folks who had a connection to Maine. You know, perhaps they were born here and then lived somewhere else and then fought in a regiment from that state. I did a little search. The National Park Service has a database where you can search by soldiers. And, you know, I didn't really get an answer because I put in Maine and I put in Confederate. And it didn't say no search results. It just didn't know what to do, and I kept getting an error message. But if you put in southern states, obviously you got a lot of names, or border states. So, you know, that doesn't disprove it. But the fact that the database couldn't even process that request was kind of saying, hey, I think you did something wrong here. And I don't want to monopolize the time, but just about death threats, you know, death threats are horrible, and no one should ever be making them. But let's remember, this is a governor who wanted to have a duel with Representative Drew Gattine and said he wouldn't point his gun at the ground. He suggested that Mainers should shoot, presumably to kill drug dealers. He wishes that guillotines were legal again. So when you use that kind of rhetoric, you create an atmosphere where other people think that's okay. He's a leader and he's saying these things. I hope that he did not receive death threats, but let's look at the atmosphere that he has created or allowed to grow.
Yeah, I think what's important to note about this whole discussion we've had since the tragedy in Charlottesville is it's not about statues. It's not about how to honor our military past or the complexity of history. It's about a not insignificant group of Americans that feel like the country's getting away from them, that the country's changing, that the good old days are gone, that that it's slipping away from them somehow. And the politicians who want to exploit that. And it's not just in the South. It's in Maine. It's all over the country. So you have people like President Trump and Governor LePage who have no problem getting into that division and pushing apart and saying, I hear you. I'm here to defend your country, the real America. And that seems to be going a long way.
If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to have you call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, or you can post to our Facebook page. We're talking about the month in news in Maine, and we'll be right back.
How much control do we actually have over our personality traits?
My personal bias is we've got no agency at all.
But are there things we could actually do to change our wiring?
If we understand these processes, tap into these processes, We can be ruler over our genes.
I'm Guy Raz, Hardwired. That's on the next TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock, with a rebroadcast Wednesday evening at 11 o'clock on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the news of the month. What happened in August that struck a chord with you? Joining me today, Susan Young, who is editorial page editor of the Bangor Daily News, Ben Bragdon, editorial page editor for the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel, and Greg Kesich, editorial page editor for the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. I want to continue the conversation we had right before the break, talking about Governor LePage. After he made the comments in support, it seemed, of President Trump's comments about what had happened in Charlottesville, a lot of people on my social media feed speculated that he was angling for a job in the Trump administration. This was further proof of that. Do you all see that or not really?
We've been hearing it for a long time, and it hasn't happened yet. So I'm just a little bit skeptical of that claim.
I don't know what they would want him to do. You know, yeah. What kind of job would you hire him for? They already have a guy who yells at everybody and is angry. I mean, that's the president's job. It's hard to see him running an agency or being a diplomat. I think he's going to run for Senate. He seems to be running for something. And he has not really he's been kind of cagey in his denials about running for Senate against Angus King. I would not be surprised at all if he were to announce sometime very close to the primary.
Yeah, I certainly can't see him as, you know, Undersecretary of Health and Human Services or, you know, sitting at a desk in some huge D.C. office without cameras following him everywhere. Sure, I think he ends up running. I think his it just fits his personality, and he could see it as this capstone. He came out of nowhere to win the governorship. No one thought he would win. No one thought he would win a second term, and now no one thinks he can beat Angus King, who he obviously dislikes very much. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be involved in that election anyway. He's got Mary Mayhew running for governor, kind of extending his legacy. He's maybe she'll be running against Susan Collins. Who knows? And, you know, why announce now? There's no point to it. Why announce now? Why not wait until as late as you can and then hop in and go 110 miles an hour to election day?
Before we go to calls, one more thing I want to bring up. Your paper today, Susan, an article probably in all your papers, the one I have in front of me is the BDN. Bruce Poliquin, behind closed doors, Bruce Poliquin says talking to press could cost him his seat. That's the subhead. But when you look more closely, I think he said privately talking to the national press could cost him his seat, though he is not as responsive as Maine reporters are used to having in their congressional delegation when we call him and ask him for comments.
That's very true. And I think politicians like Bruce Poliquin have forgotten that they work for the people. I mean, it's very easy and popular these days to denigrate the media, but we are a stand-in for the public. We go to meetings, we ask questions because it is our job to let the public know what their elected officials are doing. So when he refuses to speak to us, he's really refusing to speak to his constituents, and his constituents should be outraged about that. You know, as I said, everybody likes to hate the media, but they should be upset that they have someone who was elected to represent them that won't answer questions, won't say what his positions are. That should not be acceptable.
And we already know that there are several Democrats poising to run against him. And just a couple days ago, Jared Golden has announced, and he's a Democrat. He serves in the legislature. He's in leadership. And he also is a veteran, which is part of what I understand a bit of a strategy in the Democratic Party this year.
Well, that's what I heard on Maine Public. Steve Missler had a great piece on that, about active recruiting of veterans to run as Democrats for Congress. And I guess it's because it would, I don't know, fulfill a need or answer a complaint about Democrats being, I don't know what, weak, not patriotic enough.
Anti-military.
Yeah. And they voted for, you know, Bruce Polakon got elected and he's not a veteran. So I don't know if it's a magic.
We'll go to Chris, who's calling from Lewiston. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm just going to comment on the governor's comments the other day about the whole South thing. You know, one of the things he said was that the Civil War was not fought about slavery initially, was fought about, property rights and state rights, which is absolutely and utterly insane. It takes about a first grade education to understand that that's not factually accurate. But a number of years ago, I had a friend of mine, a very close friend, who moved to the South, and started posting on Facebook that the Civil War was not about slavery. It was about property rights. So I decided to really, really research it because being a liberal, that's what we do. We think, well, maybe I'm wrong. So I researched it, and I started reading all the articles of secession, you know, the statements of secession by the various governors in the South, and every single one of them says, we're going to secede because you're trying to take away slavery. And it didn't take very long to figure that out. And the fact that the governor is so wildly ignorant and so wildly dumb that he can't understand that is beyond comprehension. But it fits exactly into his narrative of he has binders of black people that are all the drug people in Maine, even though 90% of the people in his binder were white. I don't think he's a racist. You know, if he met a black person, he's not going to hate him just because he's black. But he's insanely ignorant, just as Trump is, entitled people who don't get it. And, you know, what's depressing is about 25 to 30% of the population will always vote for someone like Trump or vote for someone like LePage. And so when the Democrats put forward a really good candidate and then somebody else like Terry Hayes will run and we split the vote again, we may well just get somebody else that the 30% really, really like. We're in really difficult times, and people like LePage need to be called out for being insane.
Chris, thank you so much for your call. I'm going to grab on part of what you talked about, which is the next governor's race and whether an independent will dilute the vote. Of course, we don't even know the fate of the ranked choice voting initiative. You guys have thoughts on Chris's call?
There's certainly going to be a multi-party race. There always is. The fact that the court gave an opinion that ranked choice voting is unconstitutional makes it seem very unlikely to me that it will be in place for the governor's race next year. I think the jury is still out on the Senate race and the primaries, but I think the candidates should be looking at a multi-party race and I think a lesson of Paula Page is that if you have a very enthusiastic, supportive minority, that's enough. And that's, I think that's going to be, going to play out in 2018.
We'll go to Stephanie, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Stephanie, go ahead.
Hi, what a great show. Thank you for being there, buddy. I wanted to comment on the Katahdin Woods, and I think it's relevant to all these topics today. There's a common denominator, or thread, if you will, that there's an undertone to things, and not knowing what's not being said is really more important to be looking at that direction, I think, with the woods. This could be setting a precedent for things to happen across the country with other lands. I think we're dealing with a business administration in our presidency, and there's a lot of wheeling and dealing going on, and there's an undertone to that. I'm concerned at the comments that our president does incite people to be aggressive, and the patriotism has been at a low for a couple of years now, and I think President Trump ran with that, and he feeds off that energy, and unfortunately we have to get the message out, use words. We're one nation under God. We're one nation, and it's I think Olympia Snow is a fantastic public servant. She's done well for us. I would have liked to have seen her go further. I think she'd be a tremendous governor. But she'd be an asset staying in the Senate as well.
Okay, Stephanie, thanks so much for your call. I understand Senator Snowe is quite busy serving on a number of boards and has a foundation to help young women succeed. Do we know anything about any potential political aspirations, or is she really, really, really retired from all that?
Wow, we really don't hear much from her. You know, I know she's busy in kind of a private way, in private life, and as you said, but I haven't heard from her in a public way in quite a while.
I think she's retired.
Yeah.
Stephanie, thanks so much for your call. We'll move on to Jim calling from Gray. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for your show, and thank you for the call, for taking my call. There was a couple of things with Paul LePage. With the part about it was a property rights thing about the Civil War and other things. But, yes, it was property rights for the white southern rich landowners to own property called slaves. And it was given by the, you know, taken over by the southern, poor southern whites as a part of their heritage, but it isn't. And another point on history with Maine, I believe when they built the hospital across the river from the Capitol building, it was because they wanted to remember who they were taking care of and the reasons why they were in office to take care of the poorest people. And the history of with Paul LePage, he was a bully on Summer Street in Auburn in the 50s and 60s when he lived with a Myrick, and he's still a bully today.
Jim, thanks so much for your call. I didn't know that. Have any of you heard the history of the Amhigh
sure.
building?
Yeah, yes, that's yeah, true? Yeah. That's the story anyway. That's the one that they tell at the State House. I mean, I think the whole property rights issue is interesting in terms of how we use in politics, people use history and this kind of selective reading of it. It was just about 6 months ago the governor was lecturing John Lewis, the civil rights icon, about how he didn't understand the history and that Northern Republican white people came down south and ended slavery. And I think he said a simple thank you would suffice. And now it's kind of this abstract issue, like what the farmers thought that, you know, the new comprehensive plan didn't put enough in tree growth. You know, it was clearly about slavery, and Maine was a hotbed of abolitionism. It was, I think, more Maine soldiers per capita that went to the Civil War than any other state in the North. And if you read the BDN's editorial, had some good quotes from letters of people. It was the issue that drove them, that motivated them, was slavery.
And Maine was a hotbed of abolitionists, but it also has a history of the Ku Klux Klan existing and into the 20th century. Well,
yeah,
into the 20th
century.
Century,
yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So, Jim, thanks so much for your call. We're going to move to Tom in Yarmouth with a similar comment. Go ahead, Tom. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm just wondering about this. It's so interesting that the Civil War is being discussed so much today. But people are so ignorant about it. At least our governor is. Why do you think that is? Why does something that was so huge 150 years ago seem to be people are misunderstand it today?
I think we have a lot of trouble reckoning with slavery and race in this country. And you're taught all through school. You're taught that. That the Civil War solved a lot of those problems, or that the Civil Rights Movement, you're told that slavery was over states' rights, and you're told that the Civil Rights Movement was peaceful, and I don't think people really get a clear picture of what happened in those times throughout history. And then when they were confronted with these facts and people are angry about them, then they get very defensive. And that turns and it becomes this really tough discussion about identity and blame and history that devolves into yelling because people just don't know how to handle it.
And I think it's important to remember an affection for the Confederate cause comes up periodically in American history. a lot of the statues that are now the root of a lot of the anger and discussion weren't put up right after the war. They were put up a lot longer during the Jim Crow era. And it's interesting who has statues and who does not. There were Civil War Confederate heroes that later supported rights and voting rights, property rights for blacks. And we don't have many statues of those folks. So the even how we remember the war is colored by who is bringing it back to the forefront. And with so much division, a lot of it over race right now, it's only natural that, again, a lot of people are going to feel that affinity for the Southern cause, for the rebel cause, and maybe intentionally or not misremember what actually happened.
And can I point out something quick that you know, Ben touched on this earlier, but the Charlottesville rally, the occasion of it was Civil War statues, but it was not really the substance of what was going on. They were not chanting about Robert E. Lee. And they created a real political problem for the Trump administration and other Republicans because they had found space in the big tent for these hardcore alt-right, white nationalist extremists. And they've managed to pivot to make this about whether or not it's worthy to honor a Civil War general. You know, LePage has us all running to find historians to find out exactly, you know, how many Confederates were. But really, you know, this was a rally with swastikas and torches. And that is where the focus should have been.
Tom, thanks for your call. We do have to take another break. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Lamy Wellahan Shoes, committed to reducing greenhouse gases at all their locations throughout Maine, because what's good for the environment is also good for business.
Two marches planned in the Bay Area this weekend are expected to draw white nationalists. Parents and teachers are having frank conversations with young people who want to counter-protest.
In Charlottesville, a number of folks were trying to protest nonviolently, and then violence occurred. So if you're choosing to not participate, that also makes a lot of sense.
Youth Radio this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 until 6:30 each weekday evening on Maine Public Radio.
Tens of thousands of counter-protesters came out to rally against hate speech in Boston last weekend. Some observers hope this is the start of something bigger for the city.
I'm encouraging them to look at these persistent barriers of systemic racism that have failed to be addressed for decades and decades and decades.
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll explore activism, free speech, and racist symbols after Charlottesville and Boston.
Next, this afternoon at 2 o'clock on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, a roundup of the latest news in Maine. All of our panelists today are editorial page editors. A first, joining me, Ben Bragdon with the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel, Greg Kessich with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram, and Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Have the three of you been in the same room before? Do you know each other already?
No.
We have not.
Oh, this is great.
I mean, we know each other, but only by reputation.
And your stellar reputations, correct?
Yeah.
So before we go back to the phones, though, there were some other important news that happened that we haven't discussed yet. And one is the federal audit of the Department of Health and Human Services handling of vulnerable adults with intellectual disabilities in group home settings. If I'm remembering correctly, 133 deaths, Susan, that were not investigated properly. It's not that we know that something was mishandled. It's just that they were not investigated and that they need to be under the guidelines that Maine is operating under.
Right. They were not investigated at all.
Right.
Even though that is required by federal law. The state did report 300 cases of abuse, and those also must be investigated. They investigated only 5. And to me, just the numbers out of the report are astounding. And this was for a 2-year period. The department says, well, we were having a reorganization. This was in the past. Everything's fine. Those answers just don't suffice when you're talking about this population and just how stunning their lack of concern and lack of response was. At a time when they were telling us DHHS couldn't do lots of other things because they had to prioritize this population, and clearly they weren't prioritizing them at all.
The DHHS response says things have changed.
Well, that's what they say. It's, you know, I think it's important to remember that this is a very difficult task, that the state doesn't provide these services directly. They contract with a number of small agencies, and they actually provide the service. However, the administration has been nickel and diming these programs the entire time that, as Susan says, that they've been identifying their clients as the truly needy, the people that we can't afford to have health care for those people because we have to be able to take care of these truly needy people. And the providers are having to make do with very low reimbursement rates, and they have trouble keeping staff, keeping up with the cost of living. And I think, to me, this is an example of what happens when you have people who don't believe in the power of government to do good in charge of government. And they have, under Governor LePage, they have measured their success by the number of people that they have excluded from service and their overall budget, and not on the quality of the services that they provide.
Yeah, this is part of a pattern with DHHS, right? They something comes up and they say that's not a problem, and if it is, we've already fixed it. And they've said that, you know, this report covered, I think, until 2015, mid-2015, and you know, here we are 2 years later. They say it's fixed. They're the only ones saying it's fixed. All the providers, the parents, the people depending on these services say DHHS is non-responsive, that they call them, that they told them about these problems, and they get no response. And that's really concerning, because as Greg said, this is a poor system on its best day, and it's underfunded, and it can stand to be a lot better. And it's obviously maybe worse than we thought.
We have a comment from David, who called but had a poor connection. So what he wanted to say is, I think the governor is prioritizing short-term gain over long-term gain in terms of Maine's energy independence. Also, I'm a Republican who supports Susan Collins, and those who call someone a rhino don't understand that the rhinos are the way Republicans were before.
Right. So true. I mean, 20 years ago, we would have said that, you know, she's right there in the typical profile of a Republican.
We'll go to Larry calling from Portland. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I've always wanted to get my two cents in on this. There's a much broader picture on things like racism and the polarization. It's kind of like empowerment through association. If you're a hard, you know, working person who feels doubt, you're going to find a group or a club or join them, and you're going to feel much more empowered by that group. And today's culture and technology only encourages that. You find your group, you get behind them, and everyone outside of your group is your enemy. It's kind of more of a broad sociological thing, but that's probably never going to change at this point.
Interesting thought, Larry. Greg Kessich, your column, All Politics is Cultural.
Right. Well, you know, and I think what has changed, Larry, is that the technology makes it so that no group is too small. You can find community for almost anything now. And it enables people, like-minded people all over the world, to find each other and have that that association that you're talking about, and exclusion of others.
Thanks, Larry, for your call. We'll go to Harpswell now. And Calvin. Hi, Calvin. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you? I'd just like to add a parallel comment to Governor LePage's statement about teachers. So many times we talk about the quality of the teachers we have, and whether they are abundant or not, I think, is irrelevant. But I had a incident several years ago when I was teaching college, and we had a number of foreign students in the university. And a student came up to me, who was one of my students, and said, "My father would like to speak with you." And I said, oh, yeah, fine. And he came up, and the first thing he did was shake my hand. He said, I want you to know that you are the second most important person in my son's life. Obviously, he was the first. I was the second. And I think so many times we think of teachers as commodities, and not in the sense of how parents feel about the teachers who are teaching their children.
Calvin, thanks so much for your call. And go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think we can understate how tough it is to be a teacher now. It's a completely different job than it was 30 years ago, and it was tough 30 years ago. We ask schools and teachers to do so much more. They are educators. They are social workers. They feed kids. They keep them after school. They keep them summers. It's an incredibly tough job that we are asking schools to do, and attacking them the way that the governor does, it doesn't help. It's tough to draw people to that profession for a reason. We don't have enough teachers in Maine. We don't have enough teachers in the country, and that's a big part of the reason is because people think the way that the governor does.
Calvin, thanks so much for your call. I'm going to try to squeeze in one or maybe two more. Go to David calling from Aroostook County. David, go ahead.
Thank you. One of the problems we have that has not been discussed that is most urgent is the declining population. The governor actually put in a bill that was defeated by his own party that might have addressed that by bringing young people to Maine and helping to pay for their college education. Maine is more people are leaving, more people are dying and are being born, and this subject needs to be discussed with a real urgency.
Well, especially in some counties. I think Cumberland and York County are growing, but where you're calling from, not so much. Susan?
Yeah, absolutely. And a part of it is we need to make sure that we're a state that sends a message that we're welcoming of people of other cultures from other places. Calvin makes a very good point that with declining population, declining birth rates, we're not going to grow our way out of this problem ourselves. We need people from other states, other countries to come here. So when comments are made that portray Maine and its leadership as racist, that's not helpful to a state that needs to grow its population and its economy.
David, thank you for your call. Trying to squeeze in one more. We'll go to Dan, who's calling from Wells. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. Oh, shoot. We just lost him. We will go to Joe, calling from Augusta. Hi, Joe.
Hi. A quick comment about the Civil War and race issues. I think we're in a bit of denial. I teach in a high school in Maine, and the amount of race jokes from teachers, which I've called people on, now they don't say them, but is incredible. And I think LePage and Trump is a big litmus test for our level of racism, and I think we're in denial. And I think we stay in bubbles. Like the panel members on vacation, I'm sure their friends are not telling race jokes, but, it is happening out there. It's pretty widespread, and I think we're not being honest about it.
Joe, thanks for your call.
You know, I think Joe's right, and I think everybody has bias. Everybody has prejudices. It's something that, we learn to account for in our day-to-day lives. And, when you start talking about racism, you're talking about a system of oppression, and you're talking about people in official positions who are acting on these biases in ways that perpetuates inequality. And, I'm really sorry to hear that teachers are participating in that. It's really scary to see somebody like the governor, talk about his binders full of black drug dealers, because he is a person of authority who spreads the word, that's okay and that's an acceptable way to behave.
Yeah, I think there's an idea out there that racism is putting a sheet over your head and setting a cross on fire. It is that in its worst level, but it's also all these little institutional things and housing and employment and that come up every day and that we all contribute to in some way or another. And when people hear that, they don't want to deal with it, and they become very defensive about it. And that's where we're at.
That's going to be our last word. Thank you all for being here. Ben Bragdon, editorial page editor for the KJ. Susan Young, editorial page editor for the BDN. And Greg Kessage, editorial page editor for the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. Sandra Harris ran the board today. The show was produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling.